The Blue Sky Boys dramatizes the unorthodox creative process used by a group of maverick engineers at NASA to land men on the moon. It's a wild comedy about the beginnings of the Apollo space mission and about the crossroads of science and art. Capitol Repertory Theater in Albany, New York will launch, yes, pun intended, a production of the play directed by Gordon Greenberg. Previews begin tonight and the show opens on Tuesday. The show is is written by Deborah Brevoort, who joins us. Did I get that right, Brevoort?
You got it right.
Okay,
Brevoort,
great.
Yes.
We were practicing before we went on, and obviously she got it right, and I was just trying to copy her. It's a delight to have you here. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
You, when it comes to how you get around to a subject like this, I guess it's safe to say that you come by some of this honestly. You've been trampling around in these woods for a while.
In the play, in the theater woods,
well,
you mean,
in
or
the theater,
in the science?
In the theater woods, but also in the subject.
Well, yes. I mean, I am a child of the 60s when the space race took place. And my mother is related by marriage to John Glenn.
Yes.
And so all of this NASA stuff was a very big thing in my household. And as a child, it meant I got to stay up late and watch the newscasts. If there was a launch, I sometimes didn't have to go to school. And we got to eat Swanson TV dinners in front of the TV set while we watched all the newscasts about the moon and about astronauts. So it was a really important and fun part of my childhood.
You hail from Alaska. Your best known play is The Women of Lockerbie.
That's right.
As well as The Comfort Team, The Poetry of Pizza, perhaps the greatest title in theater.
I'm fond of it.
Yes, The Poetry of Pizza, and yes, Blue Sky Boys, which is at Capitol Rep and making its premiere, correct?
That's right.
What does that mean when you work, and how do you know, okay, we're ready to start the process? We're ready to get it into a theater and put it up and see what happens.
Well, the process of bringing a play to the stage is actually a pretty long one. You do a series of readings, and this play has had readings. It's had staged workshops. It had an early production at the Barter Theater in Virginia, which is way down in Appalachia. And during those processes, I was able to refine and rewrite. And when Maggie said that she wanted to do the premiere here, I jumped at the chance and have been in the rehearsal hall with Gordon Greenberg, who's directing, and with this wonderful cast of actors, and have been doing rewrites. In fact, I did a little one last night.
So without giving it away, what constitutes a little rewrite for you?
Oh, last night it was two new lines.
Okay.
It was nothing. But there were a couple of scenes in this play that I completely revised. I threw out what I had and wrote two new versions. And so everyone has been very game and has jumped in willingly to, to do the new stuff that I've been throwing at them. They've been really great about that.
Because we do the kind of show that we do, we talk to a lot of actors, we talk to a lot of directors and playwrights and people, presenters, people on all sides of the equation, if you will. And one of the things that seems fairly constant is when you talk to the actors of how much they appreciate having the playwright in the room when they're doing it. And obviously this is something you don't get when you do a classic, but it is something that you do when you do a new work, and that's one of the benefits of doing a new work.
Yes.
What is it like for you as the playwright to work with that cast and to say, okay, yeah, let's add this line, let's do this, let's take that out, put this in.
Well, it's really thrilling for me because, you know, a play must live on the stage. It does not live on the page. And so you learn what you have when the play walks and talks, so to speak.
Yep.
And I mean, we're having a big love fest over at Capitol Repertory Theater because
it's hard not to there, isn't it?
Well, they're fabulous, and the team that they have assembled for this play, they are spectacular talents. And for me as a playwright, you always want to be in the room with the best talents. You want to be in with fabulous directors and fabulous actors because they can show you things about your play that you didn't even know you had. They make your play bigger. And so it's not about me being in there trying to get them to do what I want them to do. It's rather, I feel like I'm the follower. I'm watching them. They are revealing the play to me, and they're making it richer and better.
What is ultimately the story that you want to tell? And then I'll morph into the question of how you, the fine line between getting the facts right and making it a good story.
Well, the thing that struck me about this particular story, I stumbled upon the oral histories of the early engineers in the NASA program in the Apollo mission. And what really struck me about those oral stories or about the oral history was that was the presence of creativity. I remember as a child seeing those stern-looking fellows in their lab coats with their slide rules, when in fact what was going on in the lab was very loopy, very creative, very imaginative. They were copying rocket designs out of Buck Rogers comic books. They were turning to all kinds of artistic influences. They were doing creative visualizations. This was, what, 40 years before the New Age movement,
right?
You know? And so it was, it's really, and all of them, to a person, and I later met many of these engineers in person, all of them got into science and into engineering via the arts. They were inspired by comic books, by science fiction, by H.G. Wells, by all kinds of artistic things. So art was the starting point for engineering. It was the starting point for scientific breakthrough, and it was a necessary part of the process of getting to the moon. It was through the wild, imaginative leaps that they took that they were able to solve the technological problems of getting there. And so this play really dramatizes that process. And for me, my connection to it is that I understand this process because I'm a playwright, and it resembles the sort of crazy, loopy, messy process that you use in writing a play. It's not an orderly thing that you sort of march through. You take wild detours to places that you never thought you'd go, and in those places you discover the key that you need to solve the problem in front of you. So that's really what the play is about, and that's what prompted me to write it.
Do the facts ever get in the way of telling a good story?
No, but the thing you have to remember about facts is that when you're writing a play, you have to be what the play needs to dramatically work has to determine what you ultimately put in the play and the order in which you put it. So, I mean, the problem that I had with this play, there you should see the facts that I left out. I mean, there are stories that are wilder than anything I have in this play that I had to cut simply because they weren't serving the dramatic, you know, the dramatic through line. So I didn't really make any of this stuff up. And, you know, it's kind of crazy, the stuff that was going on in that lab. And at times it seems really far-fetched. But all of this is taken from the historical record.
When you think about the story, and as you said, it really is fascinating. What is there about, because there's the science, there's all of that, and yet just the drama of it is really interesting. I mean, just the stuff, the dealing with one another, the relationships and all of that. And does one trump another, or is it all something that you want to explore as a playwright?
Well, it's all in there together, because ultimately this is a story about human beings. And it's a story about human foibles, and it's an incredibly high-stakes story. These guys turned on the radio and heard the president announce that we were going to the moon, and they heard it the same time as the American public. They were given an impossible deadline. People's lives were on the line. People got killed during the race to the moon. They had this awesome responsibility put on them, and all of their personalities came into play and sometimes came into conflict. And it is such an integral part of the story, you can't separate it from the science. It's as much about this group of people as it is about the equations or the engineering that got us there.
Give us an idea of the characters in the play and how you manage that and sort of over the period of time that we're looking at within the work.
Sure. Well, the first problem I had in writing this play was that there were 13,000 engineers. Obviously, I can't put all 13,000 of them on the stage. So I boiled those 13,000 people down to three. Though each character is sort of defined by type and by function, there were the highly mathematical people. There were there were actual engineers who could not do math on this program on the Apollo program. So I boiled them down to three different characters. There was also a great deal of political pressure that was being exerted from Washington and from the president's science advisor, and that was an important character to have. And then I looked to the real inspirations that were used by the engineers to get to the moon. They were doing things like reading Louis Leakey paleontology essays. Louis Leakey dug...
Like you do.
Yeah. Louis Leakey was a major inspiration for one of these guys. And so when he would get stuck on an engineering problem, he would read essays about African bones. Others would read their comic books. Snoopy was a huge influence on NASA. The shape of Snoopy's ears actually gave them the design that they needed to monitor the human body in space. So underneath those round astronaut, helmets that they wear.
Yes.
The astronauts are wearing what they call Snoopy ears because it was taken from the Snoopy comic book.
So Charles Schulz is responsible for that, not for God for making beagles.
That's right. Charles Schulz's design of Snoopy's ears solved...
Or whatever entity you think is responsible for the beagle.
Yes, absolutely. And then Snoopy became the mascot for the program because of it.
That is so cool.
It's amazing, right?
Right.
So somebody's reading Peanuts and they notice something in the shape of the ears and voila, they have a major scientific breakthrough. I mean, this is, another breakthrough happened. This was the age of disposable paper plates and cups. Remember in the 1960s when you had Dixie cups? Well, it was the whole disposable products in pop culture that led to the realization that they could have a disposable spacecraft, which was one of the keys to getting to the moon. So so I bring in a whole host of imaginary characters who were actual inspirations, and they are present in the lab along with the engineers.
When you think of is it ever done? I mean, you were adding lines last night, so when will it be... When will it be like you think, okay, now I have to stop now?
Well, that's a hard question.
Or at least
For my play, The Women of Lockerbie, I did not set that play until I was probably four or five productions in.
Okay.
And I actually just did a revision last year of The Women of Lockerbie, and I wrote that 15 years ago. So at a certain point, you never stop, futzing with these things. And at a certain point, you just say, stop. It's done. So, but I'm still futzing, I'm still looking at it. Like tonight will be very important for me. I'll see it in front of a preview. I'll see this weekend. I'll watch it in front of audiences and... we'll go home and I'm sure make some more adjustments. That's just how these things are done.
And that's also the fun part, right?
Oh, it's great. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, taking a line from broadcast news, but that idea where the Albert Brooks character says, what I'm thinking here, they're saying there. That's pretty cool, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's really cool. Yeah.
Well, the production is The Blue Sky Boys. It's... The preview begins tonight at Cap Rep in Albany, and it runs through April 3rd, so you have a chance to see this wonderful production. To learn more, you can go to capitalrep.org, capitalrep.org. Deborah, what a great pleasure to have you on the program. I wish you all the luck in the world, and thank you so much for talking to us.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed this very much.
A great pleasure. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.